This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. A record number of women are running for political office around the country this year. Some pundits say the midterms will bring the so-called pink wave of female politicians into power. But a new report shows that this national trend is not playing out in North Carolina. David McLennan is a professor of political science and the director of the Meredith Poll at Meredith College. He's the author of the Status of Women in North Carolina in Politics report. David, welcome back.
Thank you, Frank. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you and have you on the program. Whitney Ross Monzo is here as well. She's a professor of political science at Meredith College. Welcome back, Whitney.
Thank you.
David, give us the bullet points. What did you find in this Women in North Carolina politics study?
Well, if we focus on women candidates, the situation is actually declining in North Carolina. We lost ground from 2014 and 2016 in terms of women running across the state. And, you know, that is in sharp contrast to what's going on in many states around the country where we see a record number of women running for Congress and also state legislatures.
Whitney, what do you think is happening there?
Well, I think that part of the story, as the report indicates, is the strength of the Republican Party in North Carolina. So when we say that it's the year of the woman in 2018, there are record numbers of women running, really it's record number of women running as Democrats. Not so many women are running as Republicans. And so the strength of the Republican Party in North Carolina means that there's simply not as many women running here.
Although, interestingly enough, as I took a look at your report, when you take a look at the women who've run for statewide office from the state of North Carolina, either Congress or governor, the number of women who have been elected to those offices since the 1940s is equal number of Democrats and Republicans, all the more interesting because this was a one-party state for so many decades.
Sure. And I think the story there is the story of the Republican Party itself and how the values and thrust of the Republican Party has changed over time in the last century.
Talk to us, David, a little bit about the pipeline, too, into politics. We're seeing a record number of women enter the political life. How does that happen traditionally, and how does a state like North Carolina fit into the national picture when it comes to the pipeline?
Well, the traditional pipeline, Frank, is that, you know, women tend to start at either the appointed level of in appointed offices or at the local level in terms of a variety of different offices, and they work their way up. And, you know, it all starts with women being asked to run or serve in an appointed office. And, you know, what we're finding in North Carolina is there are really many pockets in which women are doing quite well in the Triangle, in Mecklenburg County, in the Triad. You know, you look at the Greensboro City Council, for example, they are a large supermajority of women. But where we're really seeing the pipeline break down in North Carolina is in the rural parts of the state. You know, we've seen an increase in the number of boards of county commissioners that are totally missing women. They have no women serving on them. Almost half the counties in North Carolina have no women on the Board of County Commissioners. So the pipeline is an important part of this discussion, getting more women to get involved at local level to get them to move up into a higher level elected offices. And that's where I also think we're having the biggest challenge.
Well, Whitney, I guess that would correlate, this rural-urban question would correlate to what you were saying earlier about the wave that we're seeing in women entering politics tends to be on the progressive side of the spectrum. And in North Carolina, that's not necessarily rural North Carolina.
Right. And the where women are running is also in urban areas. And so when you see an increase in women on the ballot, it's often in the progressive urban areas of the state. And that's true for North Carolina, too. We just don't have as many of those as some other places in the country.
So let's take a look at the big picture, Whitney. I'll stick with you for a minute. What is happening? What accounts for this? I mean, it could be intuitive, but give us a more granular look at why we're seeing this huge increase in the number of women running.
Well, there are two theories that have been put out by political scientists, and they both blame somebody who ran for office in 2016. Mm-hmm. Probably the more intuitive explanation, as you were alluding to, is the idea that women are reacting to Donald Trump and his statements about women that are not very complimentary. And so they feel as though the president and the Republican Party have left them behind and they want to have a voice. But on the other hand, there is a theory about how Hillary Clinton could also be a reason why many women are running. They felt that she was a problematic candidate. They felt that maybe she didn't run her campaign as well as she could have, and they could do it better. And so there's kind of two thoughts there on how women are more interested. But overall, neither candidate seemed to represent most women in this country very well. And so that has galvanized more women into saying, hey, I can do it too. I can do better than either of them.
Well, talk about this moment in particular, because certainly Donald Trump may have taken the kind of issues that interest women to a whole new level. Mm-hmm. Certainly women had not been doing well for a long, long time. And there were good reasons for women to challenge men in power for decades. Mm-hmm. Why the surge now? Is it because Donald Trump has become such a caricature of that kind of white male privilege, or is there something else happening now?
Well, I think an important thing to consider in the after the 2016 election is the Me Too movement, which really started gathering steam around this time last year as more and more Hollywood celebrities were being called out, but then more and more politicians were also being called out. So when you combine the reaction to Donald Trump and the national atmosphere, starting a conversation about locker room talk and how women appear, and then now you have this national movement where women are saying, you know, this has happened to me. And I think a lot of men especially were underestimating how many women would be a part of that movement. I think those two things combined inspired a lot of women to go into office and change the dominant narrative.
David, is there anything, you know, one of the big questions right now is whether this wave is just a blip, strictly a reaction to what's happening in Washington, or if this is part of a movement that is a more sustained movement and that we're going to see more of this over time. Is there any way, anything that you can look at now that helps us answer that question?
Well, I think we have history to look at. I mean, if we all remember, and you all are both too young to remember this, but 1992 was called the Year of the Woman, and we saw a little bit of a blip there after the Clarence Thomas, Anita Hill hearings kind of got more women involved. But then we've seen in North Carolina and in other places really a leveling out of women getting involved at all levels. So, you know, if history is our guide, then we might say this may be a national blip, but there's got to be a lot more work to sustain the efforts. And I think I would add to Whitney's comment that, yes, Trump was important, but there are policy issues that are also driving women to run for office nationally and in North Carolina. The whole health care debate, I mean, if you're looking at who's driving the health care debate, you know, in these campaigns across the country, it's a lot of women. They're worried about losing health care and losing pre-existing condition coverage and things like that. So I think it is a combination of a lot of things. So I think to answer your question, you know, what it will sustain this increased interest by women is a real focus in on a lot of policy issues they see as becoming gendered.
Well, that really raises an interesting question, Whitney, because, you know, they say nothing succeeds like success. Women could win a lot of these cases, and still Congress could be in control of the Republican Party, a Republican president. In other words, the power equation doesn't change, which suggests that policy might not. Would the fact that nothing much would change, even after a lot of electoral victories, have a kind of cooling effect, a chilling effect on this movement?
Well, I think that we really have to think about how we define success when we're talking about women's success in politics and in policy arenas, because maybe women do win office, but they don't necessarily get to sponsor bills. They co-sponsor bills. There's some research that indicates that women are more collaborative in the legislative making process, and they are more likely to have many co-sponsors on their legislation. So that could be a way to define success. Maybe they aren't the forerunners, but they're you know, getting people together behind the scenes. But also, a lot of policymaking happens in bureaucratic agencies, not necessarily elected positions, and there are a lot of women in those. And so if we think of success more broadly, not just who gets elected, if we think about overall interest in politics, and everyone is paying attention to midterm elections at a level is unprecedented in the time that I've been paying attention to politics, then I think that even if that doesn't drive women into necessarily elected positions, but it drives them into appointed positions or in policymaking bureaucratic agencies, then we could still think of that as success.
Let's get back to the first point that David talked about in the report, which is that there are actually fewer women running in North Carolina than there were in 14 and 2016. Is there anything that could happen in this state, or are there real institutional barriers or anything that could change that equation that you see, Whitney?
Well, I think that one thing that we've discovered actually in our own research is there is a law on the books in North Carolina that encourages gender parity on all appointed boards and commissions. And it seems like most people don't know that it exists. We don't have gender parity on our appointed boards and commissions. And the reason why that matters is 65% of women who go on to run for office have served in appointed office first. So I think if we worked on that law, at least made legislators knowledgeable about that law, or even made it a requirement like the state of Iowa, then that could lead to some real change in North Carolina.
I want to thank you both. Whitney Ross Monzo is a professor of political science at Meredith College. David McLennan is a professor of political science and the director of the Meredith Poll at Meredith College. Thank you both for being on the program.
Good to be with you.
Thanks for having us.
And we want to remind you, early voting starts today in North Carolina. You can register to vote. You can vote today. It starts and runs until Saturday, November 3rd, and you can find out information about how to vote, early voting, your polling place at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the rapper Odyssey joins us to talk about growing up as a Sudanese American and how he bridges those two worlds. Hear that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill.